Final case on this morning's docket is McDermott versus McDermott. Everyone's so eager to get here today.
May it please the court, Valerie Villison for the appellant, Scott McDermott. I'd like to reserve 4 minutes for rebuttal.
Proceed.
We're asking the court to reverse Judge Galvin's order on revision, which she increased Mr. McDermott's maintenance obligation by more than double and in an amount that's equal to his disability benefits. The statutes in the case law are clear. If a party files an affidavit of prejudice before the judge makes any discretionary ruling in the case or proceeding, that judge is deprived of jurisdiction to preside over that case. The judge must recuse, and the party is entitled to a new judge. Judge Galvin erred here in refusing to recuse because Mr. McDermott filed this affidavit of prejudice before she made any ruling whatsoever in the modification proceeding. And she relied on a discretionary ruling she made in supplemental proceedings, which terminated weeks before the petition for modification was even filed. Mowerman from the Supreme Court and the Court of Appeals decision in Hall control this case. Modification proceedings are considered new proceedings for purposes of 412.040 because they're premised on new facts. It says a substantial change in circumstances. So what's before the modification court would be new issues presenting new facts. The supplemental proceeding that was before Judge Galvin was raise a completely different issue than what was before, what would be before the court in the modification action. In the supplemental proceeding, it's whether or not Mr. McDermott had resources to pay a past due judgment.
If this case were to go back and be in front of a different judge and you got the same outcome, what would happen then? Would there be a question of retroactive repayment of the full amount?
Because
I gather there's been a stay at the moment.
Yes, there's been a partial stay.
Yeah.
Mr. McDermott's been continuing to pay support under November 2014 order. Yes.
And something figure as opposed to close to 3,000.
Yes, I believe there probably would be because it's the commissioner's ruling on revision. There probably would be.
This is one outcome. If it went back, it was heard by a different judge, exactly the same arguments, exactly the same decision, just by a different judge, then your client would at that point clearly owe around $3,000 a month. And I guess my question is it clear that then he would also have to be repaying the $3,000 a month that he had, you know, the difference for going back to the commissioner's?
If the new order on remand from revision says maintenance is modified as of the petition date, then yes, I believe so. Which is why we'd like the court to, even though Judge Galvin's order is void and technically the merits of the order is not before this court, we would still like the court to address it because we think legal errors were made so that we aren't back here on a second time around to address those errors. And those errors are exactly where we're going with this. If that same order was entered and there's a large judgment.
If the order is void, I don't see how it can have an error. It can't be right or wrong. It's just gone.
It is gone. But we'd like the court to address the merits of it just to give some guidance.
You want us to be the trial court?
No, I don't necessarily want
to. We can't review. If Judge Galvin's order is void, we're not going to review it.
And if
right?
That's the case,
not something it seems to me that an appellate court should do is review a void order. So in that case, we'd be going back to the arguments that led up to the order.
That could be, and we could just vacate it, and then the concern remains that if a judge does exactly what the Commissioner Panamarchik did here and Judge Galvin did on revision, we'll be back here again, because an order that compels...
Why is that something to be deplored? I mean, I realize, you're the ones that want this order voided, okay? So But voiding an order doesn't usually go with the opportunity to get the appellate court to sit in as the trial court and say, well, if we had been presented with this in the first instance, we would have done thus and so, thus giving you, you know, the reverse order of things.
You want to waive the first issue, we can get to the second one.
You know, I don't think I could do that without discussing with my client, but that's a very good question. Well, if we're, does the court have any questions on the affidavit of prejudice issue? If not, I'd see the rest of my time for rebuttal.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honors. Nancy Sorensen, representing Terry McDermott. And to answer your question, if Judge Galvin's order did, or if she were not involved, then the commissioner's order would be standing, because the commissioner's order remains in effect pending any change that a Superior Court judge makes on revision. So that was the only involvement with Judge Galvin, was hearing.
So what you're saying is that if Judge Galvin's order is void, then the matter goes back, and it is in the posture of the commissioner having made the decision and the respondent here having moved for revision.
That's correct, Your Honor.
So it goes to a new judge who then decides the motion for revision.
Correct, Your Honor.
As if this at all never happened.
That's correct, Your Honor. So, and in the meantime, the commissioner's order would remain in effect. So he would be owing the $2,500 that the
And so, paid. I mean, do you agree that we can't really review the commissioner's order because that takes out the function of the trial court that is provided by statute?
That's correct. That's correct, Your Honor. Which is precisely the situation that we're in. But Judge Galvin was involved and had made a discretionary ruling in the case before.
But that was before, she made her ruling before the motion to modify was filed.
Correct.
So once the motion modified is filed, it has to be based on a substantial change in circumstances.
Well, and it was a substantial change in circumstances that was anticipated by the previous, by the court that had made the previous support order. The substantial change of circumstances were that everybody knew that Mr. McDermott's mother was going to be dying soon and that he'd be inheriting some money.
But the change of circumstances is how much? That's all new information.
That's correct. But it was anticipated that he would have been substantially better financial information, and that's why the previous court had said that it was subject that court had made its ruling subject to review every November. It was subject to review on what all the facts of the case were, and so the petition to modify after Mr. McDermott's mother died was really just to get it on the trial calendar, that there was no other really vehicle for getting it on a trial calendar to have the whole review and change.
How would you distinguish Mowerman?
Pardon?
How would you distinguish Mowerman, the case of Mowerman, from this case?
Well, the cases that counsel referenced were parenting cases, parenting cases where there was a change in parenting plans. The statute for modification, the statute specifically talks about new facts that were not known to the trial court.
Well, the statute says a substantial change has occurred in the circumstances.
That's right.
But it's the same language in the modification for maintenance, 2609-170, also requires only upon showing of a substantial change in circumstances.
Well, that's right. But the issue is whether it was a substantial change that had been anticipated or a substantial change that was not. With a parenting plan, there has to modify a parenting plan. It's a substantial change that wasn't anticipated, that was not known to the original trial court. In there's no such restriction and limitation on modification of support cases. It's a substantial change, but it's not one. The statute doesn't say, and no case law says that. Well, it's got to be something that wasn't anticipated, because here we all anticipated. We all knew, everyone knew what was going to be happening.
Well, then how could you bring a modification petition?
Because the initial order had provided for review every November based upon what was happening with the parties.
You're saying
and we needed
that got rid of the requirement in the modification statute for showing a substantial change of circumstances.
There was a substantial change of circumstances in Mr. McDermott's part because when his mother died, he inherited money. We had what the trial court had before was kind of just we knew he had the mother, he would be inheriting money, but nobody knew how much and when that would be happening.
Well, if you agree there was a substantial change of circumstances that allowed you to bring the modification petition, then how are you able to argue that there was not a substantial change of circumstances for the purposes of deciding whether Judge Galvan was authorized to rule?
That's two separate questions and issues, Your Honor. The first, with regard to substantial change, is yes, Mr. McDermott's financial circumstances substantially changed for the better when his mother died. The second issue is with Judge Galvan's involvement, and her involvement was she had been with the supplemental proceedings after his mother had died, and the one case was just kind of flowing into the other case. You don't have the sharp division in a support modification that you do in a parenting plan, where the parenting plan statute and case law specifically says it's got to be based upon something that was not anticipated and was not known by the trial judge.
Maintenance would normally be non-modifiable except to the extent it's reserved.
No, Your Honor.
Yeah.
No.
And you'd need a substantial change of circumstances to file a modification petition.
Yes.
And you conceded the court did not waive the determination of a substantial change of circumstances, if I'm correct. You've just said that instead the court said it was an anticipated change, so
yes,
that somehow you get there.
Correct, Your Honor. A substantial change doesn't mean that it wasn't known or anticipated. The question is whether it was known and anticipated or not. It was clearly known and anticipated, but it was a substantial change.
Typically, that would just result in the reservation of an adjustment of the maintenance if and when the anticipated event occurred.
And that's implicitly what the previous court had done when it set up the reserve or the review on an annual basis each November. It wasn't just reviewing had he paid the amount that he paid, but it was a review of the circumstances. That's what the previous order had said, and so you've got one just kind of flowing into the one case, flowing into the next case. And Judge Galvan being right in the middle and having made a discretionary ruling and therefore properly not recusing herself. It's the further part of this is that the matter of support. This court, in reviewing it, is certainly reviewing it for whether there was a manifest abuse of discretion by the trial court, and all the issues of support come back to the statute 2609090, which talks about all relevant factors and financial resources of the parties. And counsel would have this court focus simply on income, and income is one of the relevant factors, but it's not all relevant factors, which is what the trial court, the commissioners, and the judge have done, all relevant factors and the financial circumstances of the parties. The facts are clear that McDermott, in addition to receiving as being the sole beneficiary during his lifetime of this trust, which is to disperse specifically by its terms to disperse money for from time to time for his support, but in addition to that, he received the $190,000 worth of cash, which is what did he do with that? He just promptly turned that over to the estate and therefore to the trust, and in essence moved it from one pocket of his to another pocket of it and tried to keep it from the jurisdiction of the court. And that certainly is one of the all relevant factors in financial resources. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you.
I think I have plenty of time on rebuttal. Didn't use much time in the beginning. What I just want to make clear is we have appealed both the order denying the recusal as well as the substantive order. So just to be clear, to the extent you agree that Judge Galvin should have recused and her order is void, then that's one thing. But if you don't agree that it's void, then we did challenge the order on revision on its merits. So I'm going to first just address counsel's argument as to why this particular modification proceeding wouldn't fall under Mowerman and Hall. And I want to be clear that the November 2014 order did not reserve jurisdiction to come back when Mr. McDermott's mother died. There is a provision that allowed for reviews in November, but that was because the language of the order in terms of the maintenance payment was saying it was going to be 50% of his income as maintenance. His net income at the time was $2,240. 50% of that was $1,120. So the reviews were clearly, because they asked for tax returns and his pay stubs, to ensure that that amount of maintenance was still 50%. It wasn't for the purpose of extending jurisdiction till whenever Mr. McDermott's mother died and then try to increase it because of that. And it's clear that that's not what was considered here, because if you look at the record.
Because the maintenance was capped.
There was a formula. It was 50% of his income. So that's why there
up
was
to, it, wasn't there a cap in the
there wasn't,
25 something?
No. The order on revision was 2,586. Or the order on this current modification is 2,586, which is the amount of his disability benefits.
In other words, your position is that when his mother died, that was a substantial change of circumstances. It did justify bringing the modification petition, but it did not justify having Judge Galvin hear the order.
No, it wasn't a substantial change in circumstance because everyone knew that Mr. McDermott's mother might die and that he might financially benefit from it. Those were known things at the 2014 order, so that couldn't be a basis for her to bring a petition for modification.
So you like to cut the petition for modification off right at the outset?
Well, yeah, I mean,
There's
that is, if we went to the merits of our argument, we would certainly say that the petition should have been dismissed as a matter of law, because the only way you can modify a maintenance obligation is if there's a showing of a substantial change of circumstance. And respondent has conceded over and over again, we knew she was going to die, we knew that Mr. McDermott would financially benefit from it. And in 2014, that was her basis for trying to not have his maintenance obligation reduced. And the trial court rejected it, which is why his maintenance order was reduced. The only reason they kept the provision saying that he needed to notify her was because at that time, the court could have entered a judgment against him.
So, I mean, you'd like us to hold it. Well, as far as the first issue is concerned, if we don't agree with it, then we could hold it. Well, there was not a substantial change of circumstances. So Judge Galvin could have been the judge?
No, absolutely. No, because that's the point of Hall. Because what Hall says is it doesn't matter if there is or isn't a substantial change of circumstance when you file a petition. You have to take it for its facts. And the petition alleged a substantial change in circumstance. I certainly disagree that there was one,
But once that petition was filed and it was a new action, and that's exactly what they did, then when Mr. McDermott filed his affidavit of prejudice, then Judge Galvin had to recuse. It's the exact same setting as Hall. That was the judge's reasoning in Hall in refusing to recuse. I saw this case. Nothing you presented is a substantial change in circumstance, so that's why I'm not going to recuse. And the Court of Appeals said, absolutely not, you can't do that because you can't look at the facts. But certainly, our position is, once she filed the petition for modification, Judge Galvin had to recuse when Mr. McDermott filed his affidavit of prejudice. But beyond that, and let's say you disagree with me on that, and if beyond that, then...
And if we disagreed with you, it would have to be because we would be holding that there was no substantial change of circumstances, right? Or there was one.
To be honest with you, I'm not sure how you could disagree with me on this issue because it's very plain by the statutes and the case law that this is just like Mowerman, just like Hall. And the statutes are very clear. A timely affidavit of prejudice, a modification action is a new proceeding for purposes of that, and once it's done, then the judge loses jurisdiction to preside over the case. So her decision beyond that is void.
Thank you. That concludes our calendar.